Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Supporting Effective Child Welfare Supervision conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. If you should require assistance during the conference call, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn this conference over to your host, Ms. Mary O'Brien.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Welcome, everyone, to today's session. As our operator said, this is the teleconference on Supporting Effective Child Welfare Supervision number 2, Moving Forward. This session is co-sponsored by the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement and the National Resource Center for Child Welfare Data and Technology. I'm going to go over some logistics, and then I'll introduce the speakers for today's call. We have a large number of people registered for today's session. We probably will have over 100 minds on sites participating. So we have state and county child welfare staff, partners from universities and providers, tribal representatives, ECF regional office and central office representatives, and also people from other national organizations. So welcome to everyone. Thanks very much for being here. To keep background noise down, we are keeping the lines for participants closed, as the operator said. So right now, you are in a listen-only mode. We will open the lines a couple of times during the sessions for questions and comments, and we'd really like to hear from you. So please note down any thoughts you have or any questions, and when you get a chance, the operator will give us the instructions, and please do speak up. If you're having any technical problems or need any assistance during the call while you're in this listen-only mode, you can dial, as the operator said, I'll repeat that, star zero for operator assistance. They'll pull you out of the call and help you and then put you back in. The handouts for this call are posted on the website for the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement. The link for that was in the email that you got, and I'm going to give it to you again. We have posted a PowerPoint that the speakers will be going through on that website. So it would be useful if you can have that in front of you during today's session. You may have printed it, but if not, I'll give you the link now so that you can pull it up either now if you are at your computer or later. The website is www.nrcoi, as in National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, .org. So that's www.nrcoi.org. Click on teleconferences and then on the date of the session. At that website, you'll also see some other handouts that the presenters will be referring to today, a Word document on examples from strategic plans and supervisor strategic plans, and 2 Excel documents that are examples of the documents used in the time and activity study that you'll hear about. So those are some handouts on the website that we urge you to take a look at and pull up that PowerPoint if you can. Now I'm going to introduce the presenters for today's session. We have with us presenters from the National Resource Centers involved in providing technical assistance around supervision who will tell us about that, Steve Priester from the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement and Joe Murray from the National Resource Center for Child Welfare Data and Technology. Also on this line is Anna Stone, who has also worked with the National Resource Centers to provide technical assistance in this area. We are also pleased to have with us today presenters from 2 states that have been engaged in the process of working on supervision in their states. We'll hear first from Missouri, and we have with us from Missouri Susan Savage, who's the Deputy Director of the Missouri Department of Social Services, and Kara Roberts, who's a supervisor in the Missouri Department of Social Services. Then we'll hear from North Carolina, and with us from North Carolina is Candace Britt, who is the CFSR coordinator, and Christy Perry, who's a supervisor in the Person County Department of Social Services in North Carolina. So thank you all for being here, and I'm going to turn it over to Steve to begin.
Thank you, Mary. Well, it's finally happening. People in child welfare across the United States are really coming to understand that if you're going to achieve good or excellent outcomes for children and family coming into child welfare, you have to have really good supervision. And that's why, for example, in the first Child and Family Services Review, over 20 states built into their program improvement plan some aspect of addressing and strengthening supervision. Today we're going to present the experiences of 2 states, Missouri and North Carolina, with enhancing supervision by explaining the process to you, illustrating the products, and having the states describe their experiences. The effort to improve child welfare supervision in a state. We've now done this or are doing this process with six states: Missouri, North Carolina, Vermont, Alabama, Oregon, and Idaho. It really is done with the National Resource Centers working with a work group that is formed in the state. And that work group really asks for using the principle of participatory design. Specifically, people who are going to have to do the work should be involved in designing how the work will be done. We ask for representative supervisors from all the regions of the states, and we want supervisors who are the best of the best, respected by their peers. Some representatives on the work group from the central office, for example, the CFSR coordinator, the quality improvement person, the training coordinators, and university partners. Those people make up the work group. Now, let me just say a word to you about the process. The first thing that we do when the state becomes interested in this effort is to meet with the leadership and determine the child welfare leadership, their vision for where they want supervision to go and why they want to put a stronger emphasis on it. After we have their vision, then we work with the state to organize the work group. And at the first meeting of the work group, we really use the work group members as a focus group so that we can understand better what supervision is currently like in the state. And so we use them as a focus group to talk about the current culture of child welfare supervision in the state. By culture, we mean how valued is supervision and how is that demonstrated. We use them as a focus group then to describe the current structure and practice of child welfare supervision. What does policy say about how and when and what happens in supervision? And then once we have that information, we work with the work group to define for the state the purpose of supervision. Increasingly, what states are doing are thinking about supervisors as the practice experts, as the practice change agents for the state, so that the supervisors work with the leadership to define what needs to change in practice to get better outcomes. And once the purpose has been defined, then we begin developing, basically constructing a strategic plan that will comprehensively address all aspects of supervision in a way to improve and strengthen supervision. There are typically two products that come out of this process. The first is the actual strategic plan. And while there are some similarities in the strategic plans developed by the six states, let me just say that no two strategic plans are alike. They are unique and different. And another product is the time and activity study, which Joe Murray will talk about shortly. In Missouri, their strategic plan focused on strengthening supervisor training, on improving casework practice, on supporting supervisors, and then on administrative supervision. North Carolina's strategic plan focused on supervisor recruitment, training, and professional development, supervision practices, and supervisor support. And we'll talk more about those later. But when any of you who've worked in Child and Family Services reviews and have helped to construct a program improvement plan, the strategic plan that for improving supervision is not unlike program improvement plans. For all the areas that the plan focuses on, we develop action steps, tasks, timeframes, benchmarks, completion dates, and the persons responsible. But you'll get more detail about these plans as we look at the work of the two states who are participating in the teleconference today. Now Joe Murray from Data and Technology Resource Center is going to talk about the time and activity study.
Thanks, Steve. In describing the process, Steve mentioned that one step is for the work group to describe the current structure and practice of child welfare supervision. So the first time we used this process, actually in working with the state and developing the process, one of the things we offered was to develop a way to capture data on that current structure and practice. And out of that, we came up with a time and activity study for supervisors. And it was designed to answer basically three questions. What are those activities that supervisors are engaged? What portion of their time is spent on each? And to what degree are those activities planned? So one of the materials that is available for you is a blank log. It's an Excel-based log. And you can see, if you were to look at that, that it has a worksheet for each day of the week, Sunday through Saturday. And on the left side of the log, it captures activities in four primary categories: systemic activities that are not case-specific, activities that are geared toward dealing with personnel management, those case-specific clinical activities, and then other types of activities. Now, it's important that the work group be the ones that identify which activities are to be included in each of those categories. So usually we work with a subgroup of the work group to define those activities and make sure that they're described in such a manner that the supervisors in that particular state will all have a common understanding. And the supervisors will, for 1 week, capture how they're spending their time. Usually we offer 3 or 4 different weeks and ask that supervisors choose a week that they anticipate will be relatively typical. And beginning on Sunday then, they'll capture the information, and we have the log set up basically in 2-hour increments, so they can say, not down to the minute, but generally speaking in 10 or 15 minute increments, how they're spending the time during each of those interims. The log, the Excel workbook, and on each worksheet automatically compiles the results so that a supervisor on an ongoing basis can look and see the total amount, or what portion of the total amount of their time on a particular day is spent in each of the major categories, as well as for each of the specific activities. So by the end of the week then, they have also an aggregate spreadsheet that gives them their totals for the entire week. Another piece of material that was provided was an example of a report. And what we do is aggregate the results of all the logs. And in doing so, we can split out by certain demographic information if we capture it and look at, for example, different classifications or different areas of responsibility, for example, intake versus foster care. And in that report, though, you'll see that it provides the overall information about the average amount of time from all logs that were provided that was spent on systemic, or in each of the categories, systemic, personnel, case-specific, clinical, and other. And it also gives the range of responses from the highest to the lowest in each. And then it also provides, for the entire amount of time for the week, on average, how much of that time was planned versus unplanned. A second part of the report then breaks similar information and provides similar information on each of those four major categories, so that, again, on systemic, you can look at not only what portion of the total time was spent on systemic, but what portion of the time was planned versus unplanned, the same with personnel, case-specific, and other. And finally, it gives them the aggregate information on each specific activity so that an individual supervisor can compare their results with the aggregate results, the average across all respondents. On slide 9, you'll see some of the benefits for those individual supervisors, which including, it really tells them how their time is actually spent, not just how they think they spend it. And it provides that opportunity to compare how they're spending their time with others. And finally, it provides a basis if the supervisor wants to make some changes in how they're approaching. And Steve mentioned that many supervisors look at themselves as practice change agents. So by having this information about how they're spending their time and how much of that is planned, they can start making changes in their own practices, as well as looking at how they might assist workers in their practice changes. The data for the agency, the aggregate data, can also be beneficial in, again, looking at how the work is being accomplished and what resources may be needed to support that work. And finally, looking and thinking in terms of staff development that would be focused on those activities that they really want to develop, as well as how they're being accomplished. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Susan Savage from Missouri.
Before we do Susan, Joe, let me just add one other thing that I forgot to mention when I was talking. We have two National Resource Centers that assist states in doing this process. Organizational improvement, because one of the things we help states do well is strategic planning. Data and technology is involved for a couple reasons. One is, again, because of the time and activity study, but secondly, also to look at the state's capacity in their information system to get data, outcome data, at the unit and worker level, and training supervisors how to use that data to get better outcomes, get better results. So that's the reason the two NRCs are involved in this process. I also want to mention, just FYI, the National Resource Centers are up for renewal this year, and we don't know, we won't know probably until the end of September whether, if and when, who is renewed. So at this point in time, we can't take on any new states until that decision is made. And also, I think the lay of the land is changing with the technical assistance network because of the addition of the five new implementation centers. We're still trying to feel our way about how they might be involved in this process. Okay, I wanted to get that mentioned, and then we'll turn it over to Susan now.
Thanks, Steve. My name is Susan Savage, and I'm the Deputy Director for the Children's Division. If you're following along in the PowerPoint, I'm on slide 10, but if you're not, that's fine as well. I wanted to give you some context for our organizational structure before I started in on the supervision project. Under the Department of Social Services, we have five divisions: the Children's Division, which is the division that I work in, the Division of Youth Services, Family Support Division, which does our Medicaid eligibility and child support enforcement stuff, MoHealthNet Division, which is our Medicaid division, and the Division of Legal Services. So that's kind of our higher-level structure. Within Missouri, I'm on slide 11 now, we are structured according to our judicial circuits, which actually works out really well, and that's something that's happened within the last 4 or 5 years. So we have 45 judicial circuits, which are comprised of 114 counties plus St. Louis City. So we have a good mix of urban and rural circuits and counties within our state. These are divided down into five administrative regions: St. Louis City, St. Louis County, Jackson County, which is Kansas City, and St. Louis City and Kansas City are our highest metropolitan areas. And then we have the northern region and the southern region, where we have more of our rural circuits. This is about approximately, give or take, 1,375 frontline staff and anywhere from 225 to 250 supervisors, depending on where we're at. This isn't on the slide, but just so you know, we have about 9,300 or so at this time kids in foster care, so that's about the size of our state and our population. On to slide 12, which doesn't have a number on it. I apologize for that. Really, enhancing supervision in Missouri came about as a result of kind of a perfect storm of many, many things. We started out with this research-based philosophy that said, you know what, research is telling us that if you beef up supervision in your state, that's going to translate to better services for children and families, which is where we all want to get to. So we had that going on and that philosophy already. Then we worked with the University of Missouri and embedded enhanced clinical supervision training into what our supervisors got. So, and that was very well supported and very supported by leadership. Then, of course, around the same time, I don't know if you guys know this, but we're seeking accreditation in Missouri, and we are very, very close. We have one more site visit to go. And COA standards obviously support improving clinical supervision. About the same time, we were going through our first CFSR and into our first program improvement plan, and one continuing theme that we had throughout that whole process was that supervision was the key to making all these other kind of activities happen. And so that's about the time that we got involved with Joe and Steve in the National Resource Center, and our leadership said, hey, we want to really improve the culture of supervision in Missouri. How can we go about doing that? With all these other things that we've got going on, this is the perfect time. And so that's when I think it Joe or Steve, correct me, was it 3 years ago now?
I think it was 3 years.
Yeah, it's been about 3 years. Put together the supervision advisory committee, and that has had a continued leadership support, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And this has really helped us in Missouri, I believe, improve our clinical supervision, and we got through our program improvement plan, we passed it, we're headed into our second CFSR, and I think this focus on supervision has been really good for outcomes for children and families. So I'm on to slide 13 now. The process, it's kind of similar to what I think Steve had talked about. The first thing we did was we convened divisional leadership to make sure that they had commitment and buy-in into this process, and the commitment continues to be 100%, that divisional leadership really believes that improving supervision is the way to go. Steve and Joe helped us organize a work group, and we asked for the best of the best supervisors. We didn't want a group of supervisors that didn't want to be there, that didn't feel like it was important, and we wanted supervisors that could really tell us what is the culture of supervision in Missouri, what is the structure, what is the purpose and the practice of supervision, and what, not only what it is, but what do we want it to be, what is our vision for what supervision can be in Missouri. And that's why we asked for the best of the best supervisors. The work group met numerous times, and formulated a set of recommendations. And then, as Steve said, we constructed a strategic plan that was pretty encompassing. And I thought at the time maybe a little too eager, but in retrospect, I'm glad we did all the things that we did in it. Some of the products that came out of this work group, I don't have them, excuse me. I have a couple on here that aren't listed on the PowerPoint. I'm on page 14. Obviously, we had the strategic plan that came out of that work group and the time and activity study, which Joe spoke about. The time and activity study that we did with supervisors was done with a limited number of supervisors, but was very interesting to those supervisors who did participate. There's been so much interest in the time and activity study, as a matter of fact, that we revamped it to do it with frontline staff in the South. And based on that time and activity study, they're coming out with a whole bunch of recommendations about how we can reduce paperwork, increase workflow, and those kinds of things. So that's been a very interesting process that we've taken kind of a step further. One of the things that we found was that supervisors weren't getting supervision from their supervisors. And so what we've seen as a result of the work group is an increase in supervision of supervisors, which is really important. I can't say that's happening 100% across the board, but we definitely made progress in that area. Learning labs was another thing that came out of that. We're in the middle of contracting for those learning labs and those learning circles so supervisors can learn from one another. And then when Joe and Steve were done with us and had done all they could do with us, leadership and the work group and everybody felt that this work group was so important that we wanted it to be ongoing. And so we developed a charter for ongoing supervision advisory committee. The other products that aren't on the PowerPoint, we also, and this is one of the greatest things that happened, I think, all the supervisors got together and develop a supervisory conference. And it's one of the best, we had a lot of really good feedback from the conference. It was very positive for all those supervisors to get together and network. We had all kinds of workshops. Specifically, I did one on using data to drive decision-making and forcing these supervisors to sit down and look at the data and how does that impact the decisions that they make, and how does that drive outcomes for children and families. And that conference went really, really well. And also, not on this PowerPoint, the supervisors were responsible for developing a supervisor case review tool and the process to go along with that, and they were very involved in developing that. I'm on to slide 15 now. Barriers. I don't want to make it sound like that it all went smoothly and there were no barriers, but really they were pretty limited, and one of them is kind of big. Turnover. We had turnover in leadership and turnover in supervisors in the group. As you know, supervisors tend to promote up. They become what in Missouri they become specialists. And so we had a lot of turnover in the group and in leadership, and so it was a challenge to keep this on the radar for leadership, which we've been able to do so far, and then to keep some continuity within the group with the supervisors. And then in the beginning, and Kara, our supervisor that's on the phone, can maybe speak more to this, but in the beginning, we really did struggle with some middle management buy-in. Remember when I talked about the supervision of supervisors and how that was, we're requiring our supervisors to meet once a week with their staff. That was part of the strategic plan. We still weren't getting supervisors to supervise their supervisors. And so I think that's getting a little better, but middle management buy-in has continued to kind of be a struggle because we have the charge coming from the top from divisional leadership, and we have this grassroots kind of thing coming from the supervisors up, and it's taken a while to get middle management to buy into this process, but I think that we're making some progress on that. The impact this has had in Missouri, and I'm on slide 16. One of the great things about the supervision work group and what we do at the end of it is our divisional leadership, whether it be our director or a deputy director, they come in at the end of every meeting and they have an ongoing dialogue with the work group. So the work group kind of summarizes the information that they've talked about during that day. They make a series of recommendations. Leadership responds to that. If they don't have the answers to their questions, they take it back and get the answers and get back to them. And there's really been a big payoff with that because I think that shows leadership commitment to this work group, that they spend some time with them every quarter listening to what their concerns are. And I don't mean just listening. I mean really actively listening and paying attention to what they have to say because they value their input. We've gotten support from leadership for pay increases out of this. Which has been wonderful. We do a survey of organizational excellence, which is where we survey all of our staff about our organization every year. And Steve's going to talk a little bit more about this, but we've seen improvement in certain areas of the survey's organizational excellence scores, which is really nice to see. And it really has, I think, elevated supervision in Missouri to a different level than it was before. It's not just hallway supervision anymore. It's really an increased focus on that clinical supervision, that planned supervision that needs to happen. And all of this, you know, kind of culminates in a culture change. And I'm kind of an impatient person, and I think culture change should happen overnight. But it really has taken, and I think Kara can speak to this a little bit more because she was in the field while much of this was going on, and now she's on our supervisory work group. But I hope to hear that we're experiencing that culture change and that supervision in Missouri really is becoming elevated to the level that it needs to be elevated to. So, Kara, do you want to talk about the culture change and what you've seen in the field?
Sure.
Okay.
Initially, I was not involved in the advisory committee, didn't even really know it existed, but I started seeing some things happening in the field with directives coming down that we needed to do certain things, and support like I'd never seen. Just the elevated that supervisors are important, that we are impacting those frontline workers, and we have the opportunity to really make a difference in the amount of turnover and things like that we were seeing happening in our state. The clinical supervision training was very helpful for me. I learned to supervise in a different way, a way that I wasn't necessarily supervised certainly I wasn't providing that kind of supervision to my staff. As my site prepared for accreditation, the case review tool came out, and it was instrumental in helping me get a bearing on our casework, making sure that our practice really did meet those accreditation standards that we needed to be at. And then the summit, the conference that we had was wonderful. It made me feel, as a frontline supervisor, valued, and it gave me an opportunity to network and gain great information. Now, as a committee member, what I'm seeing is that 3 years ago, I guess when the strategic plan was developed, we are practicing so many things that started in that committee. And the opportunity to speak to our leadership following every meeting is very helpful. Not only do we feel listened to, but we feel heard because we're seeing after those meetings information filter out through our leadership, through that middle management staff that's helping support our ideas and our recommendations.
Good. I'm delighted.
This is Steve. Let me just report one other thing. Susan mentioned that Missouri participates in the Survey of Organizational Excellence. In 2008, we did an analysis of Missouri's data from the Survey of Organizational Excellence and also analysis of the retention data. And the analysis demonstrated that in the year following the implementation of Missouri's Supervision Strategic Plan, retention of workers improved as well as increased measures of supervisor effectiveness, team effectiveness, and job satisfaction. So we actually have some data to demonstrate that this was a powerful intervention.
Definitely, definitely, Steve.
So, Mary, I think we're ready for questions and comments about Missouri's activities.
Great. We'll ask the operator to open the line for some questions or comments on either Missouri or on the overall process that Steve and Joe described. Daniel, are you there? Daniel?
Ladies and gentlemen,
thank you.
If you have a question at this time, please press star, then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our first question comes from Lori Connerly of Austin, Texas.
Hi. I just wanted to know, when did you – I heard throughout some of your presentations someone kept mentioning 3 years later. So you actually started this in 2006?
Is that right, Steve? I get my dates confused.
I believe that's correct. It took us – this was the first date we had done this process in, and it took us a little, took us about 8 months to develop the strategic plan, and we began implementation right away. So it's been about 3 years.
And 3 years later, I was hearing people talk about they're still using some of what was taught, and they're still performing, you know, in this new higher standard. And so that tells me that there's a lot of sustainability going on, correct?
That's right, and I think that sustainability is going to continue to improve. Susan mentioned learning labs. That was a strategy that came out of the state of Mississippi where supervisors as peers get together on a regularly scheduled basis with a facilitator and help each other develop their clinical skills. Missouri is getting ready to implement that now, and I think that's going to go a long way as well.
I love the description that someone used about supervision in the hallway. It really says a lot. I mean, this is phenomenal. I'm so glad that I listened in today. I just want to find out more information about, you know, some of the more nuts and bolts of what you guys did. Are we going to have, other than the PowerPoint, is there going to be any additional information provided
or
available?
There's a whole bunch of materials on this process on our website, the one that Mary gave, www.nrcoi.org.
Steve, is that under the CFSR training package? Or where would they find? Maybe just they can just find that by searching for
supervision. There's a search engine on the home page. Just type in supervision.
Mary, you're correct that there are some synopses of the process under that CFSR training process training package.
Great.
Okay, thank you.
And Steve, do you want to mention the other handout that we provided on, which is examples from strategic plans for improving and supporting child welfare supervision? Or Joe, that's just one I think that you compiled from North Carolina and Missouri's strategic plans, just giving some examples of the actual steps in the plan under the different categories of child welfare supervision training, child welfare supervisor support, supervision practices, and management and administrative supervision.
That's right, Mary, and that's also on our website, under this teleconference.
Steve, maybe we should also mention that in, this is Anna, in subsequent states, it has not taken as long as it did in Missouri. As you said, you were kind of framing the whole process there and working it through. So this does not take that long now, or hasn't, in some of the states that we're working with now.
Yeah, Missouri just needed their hand held a little bit longer, I think.
Well, I really do think it was a matter of we were trying to figure out the process, too, and
right.
to make it work. And I think we've got some of those kinks worked out now and can have streamlined this a little bit.
And we have been able to carry forward without the NRC with the charter that they helped us develop. So it's certainly doable in a shorter period of time, I would agree.
Are there any other questions, Mary?
We'll have to ask Daniel, the operator, to check.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star and then the number one key on your touchtone telephone.
Or a comment.
I see no further questions or comments at this time.
Before we move on, Steve, to hear from North Carolina, maybe Anna, Anna Stone mentioned the idea that this process hasn't taken as long in some of the other states where we've worked. Would you want to give us just a brief idea of the how that's worked in some other states? Because it always involves coming in and setting up the work group, and then doing some initial analysis. And have you always done the time and activity study, for instance?
Well, the time and activity study, Joe can speak to this better than I can, but it's not in any sense mandatory. It's just
right.
that all the states we've worked with so far have been interested in doing it. What often happens when a state gets interested in this process is we put them in touch with people from the other states that have already done it so they can talk about what the experience was like. And I think the experience of doing that time and activity study has been very positive, and so all the states have tried to do it. Anna said that we can do this process quicker. Typically now we can get the strategic plan basically developed in roughly 5 months or so. And then some states want some help in implementing the plan, like Missouri, and then other states feel that they can implement their plan without technical assistance, as we will hear from North Carolina. So, again, it varies. There's a common process, but different products.
And I might mention also that while we have on-site TA meetings with the work group, there is also work that is done in between meetings via conference calls. The entire work group during the process will break out into sub-work groups, each tasked with one of the primary areas that they've identified for their strategic plan. So the TA and providers will also be conducting conference calls with those subgroups to keep the work continuing in between the on-site meetings.
Great. Daniel, do you see any more questions or comments there? People can do star one if you want to make a question or comment at this point.
Our next question or comment comes from Clint Haynes of Cayenne.
Hi, that's actually from Cheyenne, Wyoming. That's okay. My question, I guess, before North Carolina starts their presentation is, I'm always wondering kind of what the baseline is. Where did they start from? So if we could kind of get an idea of that. Examples are there any standards to become a supervisor as far as degrees are concerned, training standards, what some of those are? That would be helpful for me.
Well, in Missouri, we are, since we're seeking accreditation, we like to have our supervisors to have a master's degree. But what we found, and this was especially evident in the time and activity study, was supervisors were spending a great deal of their time in unplanned activities and doing that kind of hallway supervision. And in some cases, not even meeting on a regular basis with their supervisors. So that's kind of where we started at. And definitely, I believe, and from what Kara spoke about, I think that has changed over time, definitely.
And this is Joe Murray. Steve mentioned that the resulting strategic plans have been unique for each state. And when you look at the process of assembling that work group, and that work group is the one that describes the current culture, the current structure and practice, what they see as the purpose. And then, so they're setting the baseline for their particular state, and then from that, formulating the recommendations and constructing the strategic plan. So when you talk about baseline, there's been a lot of variety among the states that we've worked with as far as such things as qualifications to become a supervisor, what types of training supervisors got at the current time. But again, in establishing that through the process, that also gives them what their baseline is to start looking at, well, where do we want it to be?
Great. Daniel, we should just see if there's any other questions and then we would have comments. And
sure.
If not, Steve, we might want to move on.
Our next question or comment comes from Marie Jameson.
Hi, I just had a quick question, if you haven't already covered this. On how many meetings, on-site meetings, do you have to develop the strategic plan? What's sort of your range?
This is Missouri. We had meetings quarterly. Was that even in the beginning? We had quarterly meetings?
Yes, the meetings are typically quarterly, although some states now that we're working with are doing it every other month to speed the process up.
Yeah. In Missouri, it kind of depends on where we are in the strategic plan and what we need to get done. When we were doing the leadership conference, we met a lot more frequently than that. But the charter that we developed does require at least quarterly meetings of the supervisors to meet with divisional leadership.
Marie, this is Steve. The clip we're going at right now is typically five or six meetings, and the plan is done.
Okay, thanks.
I see no further questions at this time.
Okay. Steve, maybe we should move ahead to North Carolina now?
Yes.
Okay, let's go ahead and do that. So we'll turn it over to Candace.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I am Candace, and I'm the CFSR, Child and Family Services Review Coordinator in North Carolina, and I have Christy Perry, who will be doing part of this presentation with me. And Christy is a supervisor in a small county in North Carolina, Person County. We are on slide 17, and I'll speak to the question that someone had a few minutes ago about sort of baseline where we are with supervision. And North Carolina is a state-supervised, county-administered child welfare system. So there's a great degree of variance from county to county in terms. We have 100 counties in North Carolina, and in terms of what is required education level to be hired as a supervisor. I can speak to there is a standard around training, and that training is actually in our statutes for all direct service staff, and this would include supervisors too, entering the system new. We have a 72-hour pre-service training requirement that is completed by all county staff, and then in supervision, they're statutorily required to complete 54 hours per year of training around supervision. So, again, we have 100 counties in North Carolina and 42 judicial districts. We have about 2,800 social workers, around 500 supervisors. We have 9,661 children, youth in care, in foster care. And so that gives you just a little bit of information about North Carolina. And again, slide 17, I wanted to just touch on since 2001, North Carolina has been implementing the Multiple Response System, MRS. This is our practice model, and it's based on family-centered practices through the application of a system of care approach. And the Multiple Response System is more than an alternative response that I know many states are implementing. It really is a practice model reform from prevention all the way through to post-adoption services. And I'll just mention really briefly, there are seven strategies to the Multiple Response System, and the first is collaboration with our TANF programs, strengths-based structured intake, two responses to reports of child abuse and neglect, the provision and implementation of child and family teams, the redesign of CPS in-home services, shared parenting, and then collaboration with law enforcement on those abuse reports that require an investigative assessment. North Carolina has a history of what we call piloting initiatives, and we began piloting MRS with 10 counties in 2002. We then added an additional 42 counties in 2006, and in 2007 we implemented the multiple response system statewide in all 100 counties. One of the things that you'll notice is that in those seven strategies, I didn't speak to supervision. And so the supervision component was somewhat missing in the development of that. We really did focus on family center practice at the line level, line worker level. In 2007, the CFSR findings demonstrated that we had improved practice from our 2001 Child and Family Services Review. There was some information that from the review that CFTs, child and family teams, when they were implemented with respect to model fidelity, led to good results, and also shared parenting with our youth in foster care and birth parents. The issue here with implementation was consistency from county to county, and again, implementation with respect to model fidelity. But we felt good after 2007 that we had a system, a strong foundation in place, and we did, and we wanted to build on that. So on slide 18, you'll see that accountability is one of the themes of our program improvement plan. And the PIP was developed through a work group process. One of the concerns that we had when we pulled stakeholders together, when we talked with youth in foster care, one of the things that came out as a real challenge for us was social worker turnover, which is around 30% for our state. Again, we heard from stakeholders that multiple response system, focusing on strengths and family and youth engagement, was a good thing. But there were also concerns that the implementation was not consistent from county to county. So that also led to some recognition that, hey, around accountability, we really need to pay attention to supervision. So with that, we did convene a group of supervisors to develop a strategic plan for improving supervision in child welfare. And as part of our program improvement plan, this is one of the action steps that's in North Carolina's program improvement plan, and we, you know, requested technical assistance from NRCOI, Child Welfare Data and Technology, and we received that technical assistance, worked with Anna, Steve, and Joe, and I'll move us on to slide 19. We did follow the model around developing the strategic plan described by NRCOI. And I think what Joe said a few minutes ago is really important. While we met, I want to say maybe 8 or so times with the work group. There's a tremendous amount of work that happens outside those work group meetings. Joe mentioned conference calls. And here in North Carolina, we had subcommittees that supported the work of the larger planning group, and those subcommittees met face-to-face or via conference call, and people actually developed work products. So there's a lot of work that goes on to support the development of the larger plan. We tried to be really strategic in who we included in this strategic planning process, and we wanted, of course, as Susan addressed, you know, the best supervisors out there, but we really wanted supervisors who were really committed to taking a critical look at what we were doing, who were in a comfortable place at recognizing maybe what they weren't doing so well and what it is as a system that we weren't doing so well. So we asked for volunteers. We also did some targeted recruitment because we wanted to make sure that we had rural counties represented, that we had our largest metropolitan areas represented. It's really important, too, here in North Carolina, whenever we're trying anything out, to make sure that we pay attention to, are there eastern county reps there, western, central? Do we have the small county voice represented? So that was really important. We also included university staff in the development of this plan because they do a lot of our supervisory training, so we felt it was really important to include them from the beginning. At the state level, we had myself as a CFSR coordinator, we had the training manager, we had a policy manager, and again, this was an initiative that state division staff were fully committed to. So we had good participation from the county folks who signed on and from the state division staff. We originally started with around 20 counties represented, and the plan that we developed addressed three areas, as you'll see on slide 19, recruitment, training, and professional development, best practices, and supervisor support. The strategic plan that we developed is a comprehensive and thorough plan. It's sometimes when we continue to revisit it, it's difficult to wrap your head around because it is a lot. And one of the things that we, in moving forward with implementing the plan, we had to make a decision about what to address first because it is so comprehensive. And again, we have a history of piloting initiatives here in North Carolina. So the group made the decision that we would pilot best practices. And I think Christy is going to speak to what those best practices are. But we also felt it was really important that moving forward that the county directors were strongly committed to implementing these best practices. So we actually asked for written commitment letters from each county director. The other little shift that we did in moving from developing the plan to implementation of the plan was that we wanted, this plan was developed by the supervisors, not by state division staff, and we wanted to demonstrate that this is a supervisory plan. So this work group now is chaired by myself and Christy from a small county, and then another supervisor from Mecklenburg, which is our largest metro area. So it was really important for us that the work continue to be led by supervisors. We actually have been officially implementing our best practice pilot. We're in our 8th month, so we're not as far along as Missouri is in implementation. And that leads us to slide 20, and I think, Christy,
yes,
you were going to take it from here.
Yes. In North Carolina, like Candace mentioned, we are county administered, and in developing our strategic plan, one of the things that we talked about is how, as supervisors, we wanted things to be more consistent throughout the 100 counties. And so being practice-centered, we invited the directors to get their buy-in to a meeting where we talked about that we wanted things to be more consistent from county to county, and this was our plan, and this was what we were going to pilot. And it was very interesting to hear their perspective, that they still very much wanted control of their counties and liked the independence of being county administered. So there was a struggle there getting some buy-in from them. Most of the directors did sign the commitment letters. There was also a mistrust to some degree that with the budget constraints, would these become directives and would there be funding available? So those were some of the struggles that we had there in the beginning with our pilot. But like Candace said, we've been doing this for around 8 months. Our best practice pilot focuses on structured supervision. We have five major components of that. One, that supervisors are holding weekly scheduled supervision with staff, with at least two of those being individual conferences per month to give that staff time to come in with the supervisor alone and not doing moving away from that hallway supervision that Missouri had mentioned. We also felt that this time needed to be protected and scheduled, that the supervisor is truly available to them at that time. The third nugget is that it would be structured in a purposeful format, that supervisors will use the time to coach and mentor staff. And then the last thing is that supervisors will use a consistent case review tool on at least two case records from each staff person per quarter. So that's the actual product of the plan that we are piloting right now. Other products that have come out of our work group, as you see, are the time and activity study. We as a group, as a work group, took that initially, and there were a lot of aha moments that has been described about how the best of the best was practicing, that there were a lot of unplanned activities, unplanned conferences versus having protected time with your workers and knowing that what you were going to be covering versus the hallway supervision. So that has influenced people in our work group, how they practice, even before we came up with these pilot nuggets. We've also developed a time and activity study that we would hope to make available to the rest of the state as a tool that they can use. We're also have developed a supervisor toolkit website. And on that website, the different counties have been able to put assessments they've used with their workers, case review tools, evaluations that they may use, transfer checklist, et cetera. And at some point in our plan, we will, you know, pick the cream of the crop of these. But at this point, it's just a place where a supervisor can go and find different tools out there to implement in their work. We also have completed a technology assessment throughout our state. This was a survey sent out to the counties to determine what technology did the workers have available to them. That is part of our overall big plan at some point to look at uniforming, having some consistency there. The other product that we've developed is a social worker satisfaction survey. That has not yet been sent out, but looking at how in our pilot getting a baseline to see how these five nuggets are affecting our workers and their satisfaction with the agency and their job. Moving on to slide 21, the impact here in North Carolina. We did have a strong commitment from the directors that decided to pilot. They're very comfortable with the idea of trying something out in a smaller section and then letting it grow out throughout the state. One of the things that has been most valuable to me as a supervisor in the county is having a direct link between us and the state division in regards to impacting policy. We have an opportunity. We've become kind of the advisory group that when new things are or their revisions coming out, that we have the ability to give comments, find out why that policy is coming down so it can be explained to our workers. We've had changes that system of care values are now in our policy and training. It's been simple things with having that direct link as changing the days of when policy is transmitted out to the counties and those other simple changes that you see there on the slide about policy changes are in red, and when it's printed, it's underlined and given rationale for training. This is all a direct result of this supervisory work group.
Yeah, and Christy, I'll just add that this group, I don't know if they, when they agreed to participate in the strategic planning and then the implementation of the supervisory plan, I don't know if they realized exactly what they were signing up for and how much time commitment it would be and how much work, but the I agree with Christy that we really, the relationship between the division and county departments has strengthened as a result of this work. This is the group who was the advisory group for the validation study that we completed of our structured decision-making tools, and that was not without some heated discussions around how we were going to, what revisions needed to happen. The other thing I would just mention, too, Christy or I, neither one touched on this, one of the budget constraints that remains is, again, this is a comprehensive plan, and we're, you know, tackling it one bit at a time as best we can. One of the other components of this is the development of a supervisory academy that we're all thrilled and excited about, but it's difficult to make a big deal of progress due to some budget issues. There are some simple things that we're doing, but again, that's something that we've had to slow the work down. Another concrete example is that we have contact monthly, and it began as face-to-face contact monthly, but because of the travel issues with the budget, we now have moved to we still have contact monthly, but we've switched it to face-to-face every other month, and then we do conference calls or webinars on the alternating months. And again, there's three subcommittees that meet to continue to try to step out the implementations from the action steps in the larger plan. So,
this is Steve. I just wanted to add one other thing that applies to both states, and that's the role of the agency's leadership in this whole process. Because if you, as you listen to the description, it sounds like it's all the work group, but a great effort is put into ensuring that the leadership is involved with this entire process. In the beginning, starting out by meeting with the leadership to get their vision of supervision for the state, and then importantly, at the end of each meeting of the work group, the leadership is typically invited to come, and the members basically debrief leaders on what they did this in this meeting and where they're going, and get feedback about feasibility of different aspects of this. And it's really critical because that really demonstrates the commitment of leadership up front, during, and upon completion of the work to act on the plan, to make the plan come alive. Because if you don't have the leadership support, the plan's not going to go anywhere. Candace or Christy, you want to add any more? Are you ready for some questions?
I'm ready for some questions.
Yes, ready for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you have a question at this time, please press the star and then the number one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question is answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press the star, then the number one key. I'm showing no comments or questions. Oh, pardon me. Our first question or comment comes from Marion Kelly.
I just wanted to know what the three subcommittees were about, what their tasks were in North Carolina.
We have the Supervisory Academy, that's the subcommittee, and that's chaired by a state staff person and a county staff person. The technology work group, which is, again, chaired by a state and a county staff person, and the
time study analysis work group.
That's right. And as Christy mentioned, the work group completed the time study analysis, but that's a small sample of our supervisors across the state, and our plan is to complete that statewide.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm, you're welcome.
Our next question. Pardon me one moment. Our next question comes from Jane Macy of Seattle, Washington.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for your hard work in this presentation. It's very useful. I had a particular question kind of zeroing in on the work groups, the advisory groups, and thinking about the supervisors' participation in that. Is that, and I'm interested in both Missouri and North Carolina's experience as well as any others, is that considered part of the supervisor's regular load? Is it in addition? Do they get a reduced load? I'm just thinking about handling their time around that, which is question number one. And the second question is, whether in an ongoing way, are there terms for the supervisors? Do they serve on the work group for a certain amount of time and then they'll move off? Have you had other supervisors express interest in being part of that? So I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Well, this is Steve. Let me start that out, and then I'd really like to hear the two states talk. Well, one of the unique things about Missouri is when we started the process, the director said, look, my supervisors are very busy, so get this plan done and then disband this group so they can get back to work. And about three-quarters of the way through, she said, I've changed my mind. She said, I've come to the conclusion that if we don't monitor and watch supervision, it will deteriorate. And so I want this group to continue. Even after the plan's implemented, I want this group to continue. Now, when we originally set up the work group, there was no reduction in their workload. This was just something extra that they took on, and we had envisioned that they would continue on the work group until we got the plan done and that they would help implement the plan, but we didn't think of them going on and on. But that's when we drew up the charter that Susan referred to. So now the members changed, but as Susan said, about halfway through, we lost some members because they were promoted and so forth. So we had to add some more members so we had enough work people to work on the project. But in Missouri, the body continues, but there are terms now for coming on and off. That's what that charter is.
Yeah, in Missouri, no, their workload is not decreased. They carry their full loads plus have these quarterly meetings. And like everybody has alluded to, there's lots of work that goes on in between. They review some of our policy. I mean, there's all kinds of activities that they're involved in. And what was the second part of that question? Oh, their terms. Once we implemented the charter, the regional directors or mid-level managers requested, because it is a lot of work for these supervisors, that they be on two-year terms. So we have alternating two-year terms for those supervisors to be on that work group.
And in North Carolina, yes, this is a part of our regular work, everyday work. We don't have any terms right yet. And I think we're still in the early stages that I don't think those that have been there from the beginning would be willing to go off of the get out of the group at this point yet.
Right. I do think we don't have a charter. We haven't formalized terms. What we did formalize was the support and the commitment from each supervisor's director in their county.
Mm-hmm.
That was why we thought it was so important to present the plan to them, to actually have them in writing, you know, articulate their commitment to moving this project forward. We are at a place now where we have lost some supervisors due to promotion or whatever, and we are in a place where we're going to do some recruitment to get us back to the level that we were 8 months ago, and not a lot. We just need, I think we said, four or five additional counties that we're going to bring in. So.
And if I could follow up, do you anticipate that being one where there are people eager to come on because they're seeing the payoff from this, or is it kind of an arm-twisting endeavor?
Yeah. Well, this is Candace in North Carolina. We won't twist anybody's arm. Absolutely, it is voluntary. This is a group that, you know, Christy and the others, as she said, none of the supervisors who are a part of this would be willing to step off of the committee at this point.
Yeah.
Because they are so invested and they have seen value from it. So, no, we wouldn't. It's completely voluntary.
This is Steve again. Let me add one other thing. Fairly universally in the states we've worked in, when we started this up, we only want to start it if there's real commitment on the leadership's part, because we're asking people to do a tremendous amount of work. But in the beginning, the work group members, there is some skepticism about whether this is going to go anywhere. You know, we've served on work groups before. Nothing ever came out of it. How do we know? And, you know, all we can do is insist that the leadership is committed to this. It helps very much if it's part of the program improvement plan. And also the National Resource Center is saying, you know, we're committed to making this successful, and it's really been wonderful to watch sort of the transformation of the group as they work on this and get more enthused and excited about it and committed to it, to believe that they are really going to make a difference in practice in their state.
Great. Thanks so much.
Our next question comes from Kathy Williams.
Yes, my question was, if you have the Supervisor Toolkit website available to other states to use as well to get ideas from?
At this point, it is not available. We are using it just as a resource for the counties who are involved in this best practice pilot. At some point, we will make it public, but the group, because we are still experimenting, basically, if they find a tool useful, they send it to me, and I get it posted out on the web. So we're not at a place to share that publicly yet. Sorry.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star and then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. I'm showing no further questions or comments at this time.
This is Mary O'Brien from Organizational Improvement. we'll leave the lines open. If you have a question or comment, you know, please do just dial the star one. I just thought I would bring something up. Somebody mentioned, oh, Susan from Missouri, I think, mentioned doing a workshop on using data in decision-making, and Joe mentioned that the Data and Technology NRC can provide some assistance on that, or Steve mentioned that that Resource Center provides some assistance on getting data down to the supervisor level and encouraging supervisors to use it. And I just wonder if you all have seen either in Missouri or North Carolina or some of the other states, you know, if you could tell us about an example of sort of how that has happened, how that's been useful for a state.
Well, each state, of course, Mary, is different. And in Missouri, they were just developing their SACWA system as we started this process. And they're rolling it out now. And so they're now at the point where I think they can start taking a look at doing that. Other states we've gone to, they have that capacity, but they haven't really refined it because they're overloading their supervisors with data, and really the data is not as useful as it could be for the supervisors. So it's going to be important in those kinds of states for the supervisors to work with the IT staff to define what data elements are particularly useful to them as supervisors to help them monitor outcomes in their unit and their by their workers. Joe, you really can talk to this much better than I can.
Well, I mean, there's a broad variance in states' capacity to produce information, particularly at the supervisor and worker level. And those that do, some of the supervisors can also work with the MIS folks on not only the data that they're getting, but how it's portrayed so that it's easily readable, and also looking at the frequency at which it's provided. So those aspects can certainly become part of the supervision strategic plan when the work group is looking at, again, the current use of data and their vision for that and what needs to transpire to attain that vision.
Great, thank you. Daniel, do you see any other questions or comments out there?
As of this moment, I still do not see any further questions or comments.
This is Mary O'Brien. I'll say one more thing. Just to remind everyone on the line that this is the second teleconference in a two-part series that we did. And the first one was on May 28th on Supporting Effective Child Welfare Supervision Number 1, a framework. And that focused on a new document that's been put out by the Resource Center for Organizational Improvement and the Resource Center for Family-Centered Practice and Permanency Planning, laying out a proposed sort of model for child welfare supervision and framework for steps to support child welfare supervision. So that document is also available on our website for the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, the www.nrcoi.org. And for the teleconferences, for that first conference in this series, the audio file is also posted on our Organizational Improvement website. So if anybody's interested in listening to that, you can listen to that audio tape on our website. That will also be true for this session. Within a couple days after the session, we'll have the audio file posted. And if you think other people in your state might benefit from hearing about this, you can listen to the audio file on the website.
Mary, let me just add too that in the newer states that we're now doing the supervision process with, there are two documents that we use regularly with these states. One is the one you just mentioned, the framework, which is very powerful and very useful, and the other is the issue of Organizational Improvement's newsletter, Child Welfare Matters, the issue on supervision. And our states have found those very, very helpful in for the workgroup members to educate themselves on sort of what's the cutting-edge stuff going on in child welfare supervision across the country.
Oh, that's great, Steve. This is Mary. And that issue of child welfare, if you search under supervision on our website, that issue and supervision comes up. So that's another resource available on our website.
The whole newsletter is really good, but I like particularly page 5, where the editor identified 10 ways in which agencies can better support supervisors. And they go right to the core of what we've been doing in Missouri and North Carolina.
Absolutely, yes. We've heard from a number of states that's been really useful. This is Mary O'Brien. It's a nice one-page thing that you can copy and use. That's great. That issue also had interviews with supervisors in a number of different states, including Missouri, and some quotes. So that's kind of fun and useful for people to take a look at. Daniel, do you see any other questions or comments out there?
I do not see any further questions or comments.
Okay. Is there anything else anybody feels we should add at this point?
One final time. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star and then the one key on your touchtone telephone. I'm not showing any further questions at this time.
Okay, Steve, do you want me just to wrap it up?
I think so, Mary.
Okay, that's great. Listen, thank you, everyone, very much for being here, and thank you to all of our presenters for being with us today. Thanks, to Steve and Joe and Anna from the Resource Centers, and thank you very much to Susan and Kara from Missouri and to Candace and Christy from North Carolina. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us, and thank you, everyone, for participating. We would ask people who participated to fill in our online evaluation form for this session. The link for that is in the email that you got with the phone number for today's call. We also sent an email to people who are registered during today's session with that link. So if you could take a few minutes to fill that out, we do use your feedback to try to improve our teleconference sessions. So we'd appreciate getting that evaluation. So thank you very much again to everyone for participating, and we hope to hear from you all again in the future.